The Alabama Crops Report Podcast, your trusted information source for Alabama agriculture.
And that's why, you know, I was coming back to that initial point of surface application or broadcast application of litter. I mean, if you have been broadcasting it for several years, and if you have a pretty high soil test phosphorus in the top 3 inches, you may consider testing your soil for phosphorus below 3 inch depth. And if it falls under a low or very low category, you know, I will suggest that P application, especially injection or applying even litter in a subsurface as a strip till, you know, using a chisel, probably would be the best way to go. Meaning putting that litter 3 inches below will help the plants, and it will also help this buildup issue. And of course, it will create or reduce those environmental risks. So that's where we are headed. We are establishing research where we are developing an applicator where we can inject litter like 3 inches depth. And we are also investing quite a bit of time to develop a product which is very homogeneous rather than the highly heterogeneous litter, and convert that into small pellets that can be easily delivered 3 inch or 4 inch below the ground. And once you do that, you know, you are enriching 3 inches depth with this phosphorus, and not with phosphorus, but with carbon, with micronutrients. I mean, so you are creating the perfect condition for your roots, and hopefully, you know, you will get the maximum benefit out of chicken litter if you are putting in a subsurface. And that will take care of all these environmental issues as well.
So I guess, so you figured out through research that the top three soil is very phosphorus rich and then it's low and all that, right?
Yep.
So our normal soil sampling recommendation is 6-inch sample, right?
Yep.
So when the growers are taking that, so if the tree is very top heavy and then, you know, the bottom is low, when they're averaging it out across, like their sample's average of those, that 6 inches. So are they seeing almost in a false results then?
There will be. Absolutely, there will be. I mean, think about if all your phosphorus is in the 3 inch and you have nothing below 3 inch, so you're mixing a super rich phosphorus soil layer with a soil layer which has nothing. So you are kind of like going in a mixing effect, right?
Yeah, it's averaging it out. But
right.
What my point is, if their 6-inch sample is saying, hey, it's high or very high, they know I don't need to apply more or anything. But since they have a 3-inch very high and a bottom 3-inch low, when it's averaging out, it's coming as a medium, then like, oh, we can put some more,
right?
Because it's a medium.
That's
right.
Right.
So is that encouraging, or is that kind of causing a application issue in a way where they're not seeing what's the actual level?
It is misleading,
more?
You know, I mean, so again, like this kind of soil sampling will be very misleading, because if your top 3 inches, say for example, has extremely high phosphorus level from a soil test P standpoint, and you are mixing that STP with like a low, right, you will come out in a middle somewhere, maybe medium. And when you reach to a medium, then it will call for phosphorus application. So under that circumstances, you're just wasting your fertilizer, because the soil test did not give you the right information. You mixed like a high concentration with a low concentration, and you ended up somewhere in the middle. And when it's middle, this means like the soil test will say, yeah, apply more phosphorus, right?
So what would be your recommendation for growers to maybe consider that variability, or if it's a company helping them with soil sampling or something, to kind of really assess what their P levels are?
If I was a grower, the first thing that I would do is when I collect soil samples, I'll divide them into 3-inch and 3-inch increment to figure out like whether I have a huge discrepancy between the top 6-inch or the discrepancy is less.
And so with that, you're taking your probe and marking it halfway doing a 3-inch and then putting it back in that same hole
right.
to get the next 3-inch.
Or you can just push your soil probe 6 inches deep.
And then cut
when,
it in
right,
half.
And when you bring it, use a tape and then just cut it at 3-inch and then send it to soil
testing lab. It'll be easier in some fields than the other because sometimes it's sandy, you're like, especially the more you go south.
Yeah.
It's such a loose
right.
profile.
And you can adopt the second way as well, just like what you said. You can go 3 inches and then next 3 inches. But that's the only way to figure out how much stratification issue you have on your farmland. And once you figure out that, yes, I mean, the top 3 inch is pretty heavy in phosphorus and the below 3 inch very low, then your soil test report that you have been getting is very misleading. And you need to be thinking about that, what is the right thing to do in this case.
So I know we touched on poultry litter and phosphorus build and all that and soil sampling. I guess, have you looked into how different tests, you know, that we send these samples and that, are there any differences in those? Or
there is quite a bit of difference. Right now, Alabama, we use two kinds of extractants in the soil test lab. The first one is Melic 1, which is a dilute double acid. It is made up of HCl and sulfuric acid. And the second extractant that we use for our black belt soil is Lancaster. So right now our recommendations, P&K recommendations, are based on these two soil test extractants. So these soil test extractants work well when the soil CEC is low and your pH is less than 6. The moment your pH is 6 and above, meaning if you are going towards neutral pH, and when your soil CEC is more than 5, you know, 6, Melic 1 does not do a good job. And the reason is, think about this, it's an acid, and if you have a soil whose pH is more than 6.5, meaning towards neutral pH, what happens when you put an acid to a neutral pH, mm-hmm. right? So it neutralizes the effect. This means it's not going to extract the nutrients in this quantity. And again, you know, all of our soil tests and fertility recommendations are highly empirical, right? Because in the past, people think that if the soil test increases, soil test P value or K value increases, it is more correlated to yield, and you hit to a, you know, so you get a higher yield with a higher P test or K test, and once you hit what we call as threshold, then you do not see any additional benefit of adding any more P and K. Which is called as the critical level, right?
So we use Melic 1 across the state, like even Auburn Lab uses that.
Yes, yes. So,
and then is that also common, I guess, across the Southeast, or the neighboring states use something different?
So the neighboring state, few of the neighboring states are using Melic 1, but right now, if you look around, there's a lot of states are moving, or they have already moved towards Melic 3. And there's quite a bit of benefit using Melic 3 as an extractant. Like, say, for example, Florida has moved to Melic 3. I mean, they moved 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago, actually. And in fact, when Melic 3 was designed, it was designed for a purpose. And the purpose was because Melic 1 was limiting in a near neutral soil or in basic soil. And that's why they said, like, you know, we need to be thinking about a better extractant. And when they designed this extractant, this Melic 3, if you look into its composition, it has EDTA. And that can help extract micronutrients as well, which Melic 1 fails to do that. And that's one of the benefits of Melic 3. And the second benefit is it works well under acidic soils or basic or even in above basic, even 7 pH. And based on the research that I have conducted, we have done like evaluation throughout our soils. We have 5 major soil groups in the state. We have coastal plain, Piedmont, limestone, Appalachian plateau, and black belt. And we have seen that Melic 3 does a great job of extracting nutrients. And even the the extraction is kind of similar to Lancaster for black belt. So there's no point of using like Lancaster. We can use Melic 3 and we are going to get the same information. But if we use Melic 3 or replace Melic 3, you know, the benefits are we are going to get not only the P and K recommendations, but we can also get micronutrient recommendation. The only caveat right now is all of our recommendations were calibrated based on Melic 1, right? So if the state has to adopt Melic 3, we have to rerun our calibrations and maybe our fertility recommendations may change. But I think it's the time as well, because there's a lot of complaint going on among several farmers or clients that they say that the varieties have changed and all the recommendations are based on the past varieties. So I think it's the time to, you know, start looking into or revisiting some of these recommendations. But I will suggest that this time, why don't we use this new extractant, because it is designed to extract micronutrients. It is designed to work on high CEC soils, and it is designed to work on soils with high iron and aluminum content. And our soils are naturally rich in iron and aluminum, right? So I believe that this new extractant will work really, really well. And we need to be putting time. In fact, we will be starting some work on this area. The other thing that I would like to bring here is what we call as phosphorus saturation ratio. Okay, what we have observed that there is a critical point or threshold we call. Once you hit that threshold, you see an abrupt increase in the available phosphorus in the soil, right? So right now, Melic 1 or Melic 3, just by looking at those numbers, you cannot see like how much phosphorus or in what quantity the phosphorus will be available. But if we use this new tool, which we are calling as the phosphorus saturation ratio, we can tell that whether that soil is releasing phosphorus or it is acting as a sink of phosphorus, meaning it's just absorbing all that phosphorus and not re-releasing it back. Or even if it's releasing, it is releasing in a very poor intensity. So intensity is extremely important, right? Even if, like, say, for example, even if your soil is releasing phosphorus, but if the phosphorus is not released in the amount that is needed by the plant, we say that the intensity is low. And this tool, the phosphorus saturation ratio, can tell very clearly like how intensely your soil is releasing phosphorus in the soil solution that will be taken by the plant. So we are working on this tool, and you know, once it is released, I feel like we may need to even think about calibrating our P recommendation based on this new tool as well as we move forward and think about adopting Melic 3 in future. So there's a lot of potential.
You think, so what would be the process look like for adopting that? Like, is it the labs need to buy new equipment, need to run new methods? Is it a huge infrastructure kind of thing too? That
it is not. In fact, it will be much simpler and easier than the current one. So right now we use Melic. You know, you just add 5 grams of soil, 25 mLs of Melic 1, and then shake it, and then that extractant is filtered, and then you measure it in ICP. You need to do the same thing. You don't have to change anything. You know, the only thing that's going to change is the extractant.
Okay.
So you move from Melic 1 to Melic 3. The rest is less. Even like the extraction time is way less than Melic 1. So I feel like there's nothing to lose, but there's a lot of win-win situation if we start using Melic 3.
So if it's that convenient in a way, or easy relatively, why not offer both? Or is that makes the process complicated or complex at some point to be able to juggle between 1 and 3?
So we can offer both, I mean, during the transitory period. I mean, mm-hmm. Remember, like, you know, our fertility recommendations are calibrated to Melic 1. If we have to move to Melic 3, we have to recalibrate it. But one thing for sure is, like, if we get Mehlich 3, we can also extract iron, we can extract aluminum, and its efficiency is much better than Mehlich 1. And now you will be able to account your iron aluminum that is present in the soil that binds phosphorus, right? So Mehlich 3 would help you get a better picture of your soil, that whether it is releasing phosphorus or it is absorbing or it's acting as a sink of phosphorus. It's very promising tool.
It's very interesting. I didn't know about that stuff. So we talked about, I don't know, Simmer, if it's in this one or the podcast before, but we talked about the kind of doing like three inch soil testing.
Yes.
That is specifically for phosphorus, not nitrogen or other.
But you can do the same thing for potassium.
So you can.
Oh, yeah.
And so would you, obviously that's going to take a lot of time, right? You're doubling the amount of soil bags that you need when you're sampling.
Cost.
Yeah, probably whoever's pulling your samples probably is not going to like it. So is your recommendation there, hey, if you feel like your yields have been off the last couple of years and you've done everything right, maybe try that in a couple of fields just to look at it. Don't go whole hog on it, but
that's true.
But just do it somewhere just to see.
Yeah. I mean, that's a one-time investment, I see. Like, say, for example, if your soil in the top is extremely high, it's going to read extremely high regardless. But if you are investing one time to know what is below 3 inch, right? And if you know that if that soil is low in phosphorus, that low in phosphorus or potassium, you cannot change in a year or 2 year, right? It takes a lot of time to change that fertility level. So I think it's a good one-time investment to know what is in the top 3 inch and what is below 3 inch. This way you will know whether pulling soil samples, like using a 6-inch probe, is a better approach, and basing your fertility recommendation on that 6-inch is a better approach, or I should be thinking about pulling two separate depths and then making my P and K recommendations or applications based on those soil test results.
So let's say somebody did it, and what you just said, there is a difference between the top and bottom. How would a grower approach a recommendation for something like that?
So the only, say for example,
because we don't have, we talked about this subsurface bending, but we don't have any commercial application.
You gotta knife it down.
You have to knife it down using liquid fertilizer.
That's where I was getting at. So their only option at that point,
yep,
because we don't have a way to inject later or broad subsurface band yet.
Yep. The only option is to apply knifing a liquid fertilizer below 3 inch.
So, and again, my brain, I did not do very good in soils or soil fertility in undergrad. So it is tied up in the top 3 inches. We've established that. Well, in our theoretical field here, right?
It's more available in the top 3 inches.
There's more availability. Is that slowly leaching down? And where I'm getting at is, if I do have really high numbers in the top three and low in the bottom three, can I just skip out on phosphorus for a couple of years and it's going to keep slowly going down? Or are you getting enough from, well, I'm starting to confuse myself, but in my normal application, am I getting enough down below those top three that it's worth it?
So if, say, for example, you have enough in the top 3 inch, there's no point of adding any more, right? Because there's no benefit out of it. The only benefit that you will get eventually, if you're really hung up on, hey, I need to build my soil, if you are in that philosophy where you really want to build your soil phosphorus, the best route to take would be to inject 3 inches below. Because that's an investment, and that's a protected investment. You're not going to lose it anywhere. And then you build subsurface P application.
But let's say, I just want to make sure I'm not alluding to something somebody's going to pick up with, and boy, that was wrong. So let's say I'm going into 25, prices are where they are, and I do a two-tiered approach, and I've got way more than I need in the top three, not enough in the bottom, should I just not apply phosphorus this year?
So this is a very tricky question to answer, because remember, like, plants take phosphorus through the water route, mm-hmm. right? So what happens is if it's raining, of course the top phosphorus will dissolve in water and then plants can take it. But if you are in a drought or an extended drought where you have no water for a month, under that circumstances, you know, the plant is not taking any phosphorus from the surface because the topsoil is pretty dry, right? So then the phosphorus would come from the one that is at the bottom, right? Sometimes you, even in an extended drought, even though the top 3 inch or 4 inch of the soil looks pretty dry, but the bottom 4 or below 4 inch, you still have some water, right? And that's why plants are sending roots below 4 inch or 6 inch depth. So if you have enough in the surface and the soil test say, like, do not put any more, I will not put any more in the surface. Instead, I'll start building my phosphorus level below 4 inch depth or 3 inch depth, because it will help you under drought situation. And again, nobody knows what the weather will look like, right? I mean, if we can say for sure that it's gonna rain the next 30 days or it's gonna be drought for the next 30 days, I mean, it's difficult, right?
So, I guess one mental thing, which there's a lot of things in farming that, you know, because again, like Scott said, prices and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if a grower's got later on his own farm or he's got chicken houses, all that, he's got all this phosphorus sitting. But we're telling him, no, you need to invest in the injection and all that, which adds more cost and extra other stuff, right? That's something, even with us sometimes personally, it's hard to kind of, right, justify, especially right. when there are very thin margins.
Right.
So I think that's what, I guess the main question would be, how do you kind of break that mental thing in a way? Because...
Well, and it's kind of like cover crops, right? The first couple of years, there was no benefit. It's a long-term
yeah.
approach, even the knifing is still a long-term
approach.
It is a long-term approach. So this year may not be the year to start that, right?
No.
Just depends on your situation. Who owns the farm, mm-hmm. right? Are you leasing it and building it for somebody else, or, you know, those types of things? that's why I was wondering, hey, if there is a lot up top, your dry land, so you're dependent on rain to leach it down anyway. Maybe if that top three is really high, let's just don't put any out this year.
That's true. I mean, if it's high, there's no point of putting anything.
Because it's going to leach down when
right.
it does. And,
right.
Yeah. So that
and it will be available with the rain. But if you really want to build up your phosphorus, say, for example, you own a land and you think that you're going to farm for the next 10, 15, or 20 years, yeah, I mean, I would definitely build my phosphorus or put my phosphorus below 4 inch depth and not risk all the investment by putting it on the surface. And at the same time, you know, like there are a lot of environmental things that are tied up with, right? I mean, typically any regulatory agencies or any agency will tell you that if your soil test levels are pretty high in the top 6 inch, you know, you should not be putting any more phosphorus. And with manure application, you know, we have a lot of like other tools tied up. One is called a P index that determines like when you need to stop applying any manure on your land. So you know that mindset that you're talking mm-hmm. about, that, you know, hey, I have this much of litter sitting in the ground, and I have been applying this, I guess if you continue to do that, you will create a lot of issues, especially environmental issues. And in case if there's a major disaster that happens, like say for example you are near like a lake or a dam and the dam starts turning green, you know, and the EPA or any regulatory agency audits it, you know, they will figure out where that phosphorus is coming from, and that's where all the regulations and scrutinization will kick in, and it will become very difficult to farm. So I guess, like, you know, we need to be proactive. We need to be thinking ahead of time and taking the right decisions, you know. Mm-hmm. I understand that there is limitation, but hey, if you have already built up quite a bit in the surface, it's not a good idea.
And I don't know how chicken litter contracts work, right? But there's 2 million tons, you said, every year.
2 which, million tons is which, generated, but you do not know how much that would is being applied. Or how much is cleaned out from the broiler houses or applied. But
the eater houses.
Eater houses.
but where I'm going there is that sounds like an infinite amount, right? 2 million tons sounds like 2 million tons. But I don't know if there's any how those if those are contracts, if it's just, well, I've been buying, you know, my litter from such and such for 20 years. Well, if I want to sit out a couple of years, am I able to get it again? Or they, because they got to do something with it, right? They're not just gonna just keep it at the back of the barn. So you know, I don't know how that works. And maybe you can get into where you're rotating fields every couple of years, right? Because I would guess if you have a good source and it's litter that's been good, you probably want to keep that. You don't want to lose it.
Yeah. I was estimating the market value of the litter, and you know, I guess if we are generating two million tons of litter every year, that litter is worth $90 million. I mean, think about $90 million of nutrients tied up in the litter. It's a huge amount of money. So if, say, for example, you are a poultry grower and you produce like several thousand tons of litter every year, and you also have agricultural land, the best bet would be to sell that litter and buy the nutrient that you need. And most of the nutrient that any person or any farmer would need is the nitrogen or potassium, right? So you can sell that litter and use that money to buy a commercial fertilizer to meet your nitrogen or potassium demands.
Are most of our chicken houses up North Alabama, I would guess?
North and Southeast. So we have two belts.
Because I was thinking it would be great in a way, and now I'm kind of looking into if we have a spatial map of these across the state. And I think in the other day in your meeting, you mentioned that litter is only economical if you transport it within 80 miles
That's true.
Of it, right?
Yeah.
So you draw these circles around those spatial locations that these are the areas. You do a soil sampling in those fields, in those areas, versus outside to kind of see how much over application or how does the P, you know, because it's almost like these recommendations and all these other considerations you're finding then could be a lot more targeted in those areas and those fields than be a very broad across the state, because there could be some growers who may be applying it every 30 or 4th and they may be fine, right?
Yeah.
But it's happening so much closer to the litter houses
that
this could be a targeted kind of
strategy in those areas, right?
Okay.
Well, Rishi, this has been good. This has been a good episode, Simmer. I've enjoyed this. I think our recording device is about to die, and I'm going to have to go pick up my daughter from school in a couple minutes, too. So
I think that we learned a lot. It's not just the growers. I'm always, you know, one thing I enjoy about, you know, like our guests coming and sharing some of the stuff that we don't even know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, I learned, relearned what a broiler chicken was. Yeah.
I learn every episode about some new stuff, and I guess it kind of makes us better scientists in a way.
That's right.
You know,
So Rishi, we appreciate it, your time today. And as always, if anybody has any ideas or topics that we should discuss, please let us know. And of course, if any of us at Alabama Extension can help in any way, please don't hesitate to reach out.
The Alabama Crops Report is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.